Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita Madhulila, Chapter 1, The Later Pastimes of Lord Chaitanya, Text Number 35. Translation and long purport by Srila Prabhupada. Some of the books compiled by Srila Sanatana Goswami were Hari Bhakti Vilas, Bhagavatamrita, Dashamatipani, and Dashamacharita. Purport. In the first wave of the book known as Bhakti Nakara, it is said that Sanatana Goswami understood Srimad Bhagavatam by thorough study and explained it in his commentary known as Vaishnava Toshini. All the knowledge that Sri Sanatana Goswami and Rupa Goswami directly acquired from Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was broadcast all over the world by their expert service. Sanatana Goswami gave his Vaishnava Toshini commentary to Srila Jiva Goswami for editing, and Srila Jiva Goswami edited this under the name of Laghu Toshini. Whatever he immediately put down in writing was finished in the year 1476, Shaka. Srila Jiva Goswami completed Laghu Toshini in the year Shakabda 1504. The subject matter of Hari Bhakti Vilas by Sri Sanatana Goswami was collected by Srila Gopal Bhatt Goswami and is known as Vaishnava Smriti. This Vaishnava Smriti Granta was finished in 20 chapters, known as Vilasas. In the first Vilas, there is a description of how a relationship is established between the spiritual master and the disciple, and mantras are explained. In the second Vilas, the process of initiation is described. In the third Vilas, the methods of Vaishnava behavior are given, with emphasis on cleanliness, constant remembrance of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and the chanting of the mantras given by the initiating spiritual master. In the fourth Vilas are descriptions of samskar, the reformatory method, tilak, the application of 12 tilaks on 12 parts of the body, mudra, marks on the body, mala, chanting with beads, and guru puj, worship of the spiritual master. In the fifth Vilas, one is instructed on how to make a place to sit for meditation, and there are descriptions of breathing exercises, meditation, and worship of the Shalagram Srila representation of Lord Vishnu. So what are the first five Vilasas? What do they contain? I'm sure everyone was listening very attentively. What's in the first Vilas? Does anyone know it was on the first Vilas? What's that? Description of the relationship is established between the spiritual master and the disciple, and mantras are explained. So what's in the first Vilas? What's that?
Description of the relationship between the spiritual master and the disciple.
What else?
And the mantras. Explain.
Yes.
And the second Vilas? Yes. So in the second Vilas, the process of initiation is described. In the third Vilas, the methods of Vaishnava behavior are given with emphasis on cleanliness, constant remembrance of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and the chanting of the mantras given by the initiating spiritual master. And in the fourth Vilas, yes, the 12 tilaks. In the fourth Vilas are descriptions of samskara, the reformatory method, tilak, the application of 12 tilaks on the 12 parts of the body, mudra, marks on the body, mala, chanting with beads, and guru puja, worship of the spiritual master. In the fifth Vilas, what is there? meditation, breathing exercises, making a place for meditation, breathing exercises, and worship of the Shalagram Shila, representation of Lord Vishnu. And the sixth vilas, the required practices for inviting the transcendental form of the Lord and bathing Him are given. These are the things, this is what everything we're doing is based on. He said, what vilas explains about taking the relation between the spiritual master and chanting mantras. Which vilas is that in? And what is the vilas that explains about meditation, making a place for meditation, and breathing exercise and worship of the Shalagram Shila? And which is the vilas that explains about chanting the mantras given at the time of initiation? Which one? Third. No, wait, wait. Yeah, yeah. In the second vilas, the methods of Vaishnava behavior given emphasis on cleanliness, etc. And the chanting of the mantras given by the at the time of initiation. That's the third. What's the second one? That's the... Yeah, the second one is about... process of initiation is described. That's the second one. And the sixth vilas? What's that? Yes. Inviting the transcendental form, bathing Him. And the seventh vilas, one is instructed how to collect flowers used for the worship of Lord Vishnu. How to go out and steal flowers. Oh, I'm sorry. How to collect the flowers. In the eighth vilas, there is a description of the deity and instructions on how to set up incense, light lamps, make offerings, dance, play music, beat drums, garland deity, offer prayers and obeisances, and counteract offenses from beating drums. No, just counteract offenses. You shouldn't beat drums, you should play them very nicely. In the ninth vilas, there is descriptions about collecting tulsi leaves, offering oblations to forefathers according to Vaishnava rituals, and offering food. In the tenth vilas, there are descriptions of the devotees of Lord Vishnu. Vaishnavas are saintly persons. In the 11th vilas, there are elaborate descriptions of deity worship and the glories of the holy name of the Lord. One is instructed on how to chant the holy name of the deity, and there are discussions about offenses committed while chanting the holy name, along with methods of getting relief from such offenses. There are also descriptions of the glories of devotional service and the surrendering process. In the 12th vilas, Ekadasi is described. In the 13th vilas, fasting is described, as well as observance of the Mahadwadasi. One is instructed on how to chant the holy name of the deity, and there are discussions about offenses committed while chanting the holy name, along with methods of getting relief from such offenses. There are also descriptions of the glories of devotional service and the surrendering process. In the 12th vilas, Ekadasi is described. In the 13th vilas, fasting is described, as well as observance of the Mahadwadasi ceremony. In the 14th vilas, different duties for different months are outlined. In the 15th vilas, there are instructions on how to observe Ekadasi fasting without even drinking water. There are also descriptions of branding the body with the symbols of Vishnu, and the discussions of Chaturmasya observations during the rainy season, and the discussions of Janmasthami, Pashvai Ekadasi, Shravana Dwadasi, Ram Nomi, and Vijaya Dashami. The 16th vilas discusses duties to be observed in the month of Kartik, October, November, or the Damodar month, or Urja, when lamps are offered to the deity room or above the temple. There are also descriptions of the Govardhan Puja and Rath Yatra. 17th vilas discusses preparations for deity worship, Mahamantra chanting, and the process of japa. And the 18th Vilas, the different forms of Sri Vishnu described. The 19th Vilas discusses the establishment of the deity and the rituals observed in bathing the deity before installation. The 20th Vilas discusses the construction of temples, referring to those constructed by the great devotees. The details of the Hari Bhakti Vilas Granta are given by Srila Jiva Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami in the Madhya Lila 24, 329-345. The descriptions given in those verses by Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami are actually a description of those portions compiled by Gopal Bhatt Goswami. According to Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, the regular principles of devotional service compiled by Gopal Bhatt Goswami do not strictly follow our Vaishnava principles. Actually, Gopal Bhatt Goswami collected only a summary of the elaborate descriptions of Vaishnava regular principles from Hari Bhakti Vilas. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's Goswami's opinion, however, that to follow the Hari Bhakti Vilas strictly is to follow the Vaishnava rituals in perfect order. He claims that the Smarta Samaj, which is strictly followed by caste Brahmins, has influenced portions that Gopal Bhatt Goswami collected from the original Hari Bhakti Vilas. It is therefore very difficult to find out Vaishnava directions from the book of Gopal Bhatt Goswami. It is better to consult the commentary made by Sanatana Goswami himself, Hari Bhakti Vilas, under the name of Dig Darshani Tika. Some say that the same commentary was compiled by Gopinath Puja Adhikari, who was engaged in the service of Sri Radha Ramanji, and who happened to be one of the disciples of Gopal Bhatt Goswami. Regarding Bhagavata Brihad Bhagavatamrita, there are two parts dealing with the discharge of devotional service. The first part is an analytical study of devotional service in which there is also a description of different planets, including the earth, the heavenly planets, Brahmaloka, and Vaikuntha Loka. There are also descriptions of the devotees, including intimate devotees, most intimate devotees, and complete devotees. The second part describes the glories of the spiritual world known as Goloka, Mahatmya, Nirupana, as well as the process of renunciation of the material world. It also describes real knowledge, devotional service, the spiritual world, love of Godhead, attainment of life's destination, and the bliss of the world. In this way, there are 7 chapters in each part, 14 chapters in all. Dashama Tipani is a commentary on the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. Another name for this commentary is Brihad Vaishnav Toshini Tika. In the Bhakti Ratnakara, it is said that Dashami Tipani was finished in 1476 Shakabda. There's quite a number of books that Goswamis wrote. And of course, Prabhupada has given us the most important ones, especially the Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita and the Nectar of Devotion, Nectar of Instruction. But there are many others. Some of them are not so important, but they give us some understanding of how to engage in the rituals of Vaishnava activities. But I believe our devotees have compiled some, what are the names of those books that they compiled? The red bound ones about deity worship. Pancha what? Pancha Rata. Ratra. Like Pancha Ratra. Dipika. The light of the Pancha Ratra. So we have that. And we can see mostly it's learning how to chant the mantras properly, how to worship the deities properly, how to tie the sikha, things like that. Just the regular activities. So we don't have to speculate. But the essence of everything, of course, is somehow or another to remember Krishna and whatever we're doing to do as a service to Krishna. But because we may not know what service to Krishna, therefore some indication is given in these books, especially the Hari Bhakti Vilas. And this other book, the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, is quite an interesting book. Has anyone here read the book, Brihad Bhagavatamrita? What's that? I realize. It's probably my favorite book. In this book, there's one devotee, and he was sitting, he went to the bank. He was actually, the first one deals with a cowherd boy. He went to the bank of the river, and he met some elevated devotee there who gave him a Gopal mantra. Well, that's the second part of the book. First book is a Brahmin. He went to some festival, and at the festival there were many devotees there. They were chanting, and he became very enlivened. So he wanted to find out if there was some other place which he could make more advancement. Then he went to Jagannath Puri. He became a devotee of Lord Jagannath. But then he found out that actually there was a better place, more auspicious place to worship Krishna, and that would be go to the heavenly planets. So his spiritual master had given him a mantra, a Gopal mantra. So he chanted the Gopal mantra, and before he knew it, he was on the heavenly planets. But when he got to the heavenly planets, although everything seemed quite nice at first, because Vamanadeva would come personally and accept offerings from Indra, but then there was an attack by the demons and all the demigods dispersed. So Indra, he fled into a lotus flower, and so then they made him Indra. So he was Indra for some time, but then some people visited from Mahaloka, where they do sacrifices in Mahaloka. So he became interested in finding out, he found out that Mahaloka was higher than Swargaloka. He found out Mahaloka is higher than Swargaloka, so he decided to go there and do sacrifices. So he chanted his mantra, his Gopal mantra, and before he knew it, he was in Mahaloka, performing sacrifices. And in Mahaloka, Krishna would personally appear from the fire and accept the offerings. So he liked that. But then some people came from Janaloka, and he found out that Janaloka is above Mahaloka, so he started to chant seriously his Gopal mantra, and before he knew it, he was on Janaloka. So Janaloka was a little unusual because there are so many sages headed by the four Kumaras, and they simply sit around and meditate. But their meditation is so expert that the deity appears before them in their meditation. Sometimes their bodies become just like the deity. So it's a very unusual place because all these incarnations of Lord Vishnu appearing everywhere. And sometimes the very devotees themselves look like the incarnations due to their intense meditation. So in that place, the process of meditation is very intense, smaranam, remembrance, although later on we'll find out that kirtan is actually recommended more, the practice of kirtan is recommended more than the practice of smaranam. Not that kirtan itself, kirtan leads to smaranam, but as far as cultivating spiritual knowledge, spiritual consciousness, the devotees rely more upon kirtan than on smaranam by itself. And then some sons of the Brahma came, some residents of Brahmaloka came, and so this Brahmin decided he'd go to Brahmaloka and see what was going on there. So he chanted his mantra, and before he knew it, he was on Brahmaloka. So everything was nice on Brahmaloka. Haranyagarbha, Lord Vishnu himself, would come sometimes and along with Lakshmi Devi, and Lord Brahma would worship them, and everything would seem very nice on Brahmaloka. Then one day he woke up, he found out that the other part of the universe was destroyed, and that all these sages were fleeing to Brahmaloka also from other parts of the universe. And then Lord Brahma went to sleep one time, and then everyone else, then that was during the deluge, everything, the whole universe filled up with water, but Lord Brahma was taking rest. But then when out of the water of devastation, some demon came, and Lord Brahma had to flee. So then there was no Brahma, and so they elected him as Brahma. So now he is Brahma, but he wasn't very happy Brahma. And he was ruling, he had to rule over the whole universe, etc. And then sometime after that, he found out that above, from the Vedas, that above Brahmaloka, the Vedas personified, were telling him that above Brahmaloka there's the coverings of the universe, and above the coverings is the impersonal Brahman. Then it tells you about his going through the different coverings, beginning with earth and water and fire and all the different persons and processes of worship that were going on there. So he had to go through one layer after another, and there, in each one of the layers, there were more living entities than in the universe. Because although we think, you know, just like we think Belgium is a big place, or even we think this earth is a big place, but we hear that the earth is just like a speck of dust floating in the air, along with all the other specks of dust. And all these specks of dust float in the middle of the universe. So the universe is considered to be one little dot in the whole universe, the inside of the universe where the planets are. It's just like a little speck. If you take one point and you draw a line 32 miles away, so that little point is the inside of the universe, and the line 32 miles away are the coverings. That's how big the coverings are. So if you try and break out of the universe, even if you can get as far as Brahmaloka, you still have a lot to dig. We're breaking out of here, mate. It's a long, long way. So he went from one covering of the universe to the next, finally got to the ultimate covering, and then Maya personified, sex personified, came and offered herself to him. So that was the last challenge. Somehow or another he overcame the challenge, and then he wound up in impersonal Brahman. So in impersonal Brahman, somehow or another, sometimes he was merging, and sometimes he was seeing the form of Krishna, sometimes he himself was merging. Then finally he made it out of impersonal Brahman to Maharloka, Shiva Loka. And in Shiva Loka, there was a big kirtan going on with Lord Shiva, and now he thought he had reached the ultimate planet, and Ganesh was there, along with Nandi, the bull, and they were all engaged in a big kirtan, and all the residents were having a great time chanting, dancing, glorifying Vishnu. But then one day, residents from Vaikuntha Loka came, and they were hundreds and thousands of times more effulgent than the residents of Shiva Loka. And so he became attracted to go there, so that he went there to Lord Vishnu's place. He was seeing that there were gates there, and that all different types of personalities were entering through the gates. Some of them had the bodies of Lord Brahma, some of them had the bodies of Lord Shiva. Sometimes Brahma and Shiva, they become perfect and they can enter into Vaikuntha in the very body that they were serving Krishna, spiritualized body. And others were residents. Sometimes the residents, they'd enter individually, and sometimes they merge with each other and enter as one resident. All kinds of interesting things were going on. So finally he got through the gates, and there he saw all the different persons who had worshipped the incarnations, and the incarnations being worshipped in different ways. And that went on and on. And then the next stories, I mixed it up. The first story was Narada Muni. He was going to find out this is the second story I'm telling right now. This is Gop Kumar going to the different planets. So finally, Gop Kumar, he wound up in Vaikuntha, and everyone was blissful. So Gop Kumar came to Vaikuntha and he was looking around. Everything was so opulent and effulgent and everyone was so happy. And they were all chanting different mantras and worshipping different deities. But he was always thinking of this beautiful cowherd boy. Whenever he chanted his Gopal mantra, he'd think of this beautiful cowherd boy. And so he was chanting his mantra in Vaikuntha. He came to the place where Lord Vishnu was. So the gate, all the guards were telling him, when you see Lord Vishnu, you put your hands like this, you bow down like this, you say this prayer to Lord Vishnu. So he was listening to the whole thing. And then he entered into the place where Lord Vishnu was, lying on the couch, and he looked at him and said, "Oh, that's Gopal." So he cried out, "Hey, Gopal!" and ran up to embrace him. But the guards, they grabbed him and took him outside and look. They said, "Look, try and calm yourself down, you know. Control yourself. You're in Vaikuntha, you know. Don't get so sentimental." In any case, they let him come back and see Vishnu again. So Vishnu was very compassionate to him, and he appeared before him as Gopal, holding a flute, playing the flute. So sometimes he'd go out into the forest with other cowherd boys just like himself, because he was a cowherd boy, and they'd play in different pastimes in the forest. But then sometimes he'd look like Vishnu again, and everyone would be worshipping with awe and reverence. And sometimes he'd disappear for some pastimes on the earth planet, to incarnate. So in any case, Gopakumara was in Vaikuntha. Everyone else was happy except for him. So Narada Muni came by and Sora, here's the one person in Vaikuntha who's depressed. Everyone else seems blissful. So he said, "What's wrong?" So he said, "I know what's wrong." He said, "Actually, you don't belong here." So he said, "All you do is, you know, chant your Gopal mantra and Lord Vishnu will give you permission." So he chanted his Gopal mantra and Lord Vishnu gave permission. He went to Dwarka. Now first he went to Ayodhya. So he got to Ayodhya and all these monkeys came up and greeted him. They took him to see Lord Ram and there was Hanuman. Hanuman was very ecstatic in his service, very enthusiastic. One moment he'd be fanning Lord Ramachandra, the next offering him some betel nuts, then doing aarti to him and then washing his feet. He was doing all kinds of services, you know, one after another. And some time came on, Lord Ramachandra, some time went on, some billions and trillions of years. And Gopakumara was still depressed. So Lord Ramachandra sent him to Dwarka. So he came to Dwarka and there were all the Yadavas and the King of Grisena, and everyone was, there was Yadu Kumara, Krishna, and they were all worshipping him. So there was Devaki and Rohini and all the queens headed by Satyabhama and Rukmini. They're all engaged in Krishna's service. So he stayed there for some time as a cowherd boy, and they liked him because they like cowherd boys in Dwarka. So he was quite happy there. They had nice prasad. But he noticed that that Krishna was always depressed too. Always feeling separation from Vrindavan. And there are different pastimes described about his separation from the residence of Vrindavan. That he was always hankering to go there. So actually Gopakumara was also depressed. Wondering what he was doing there in Dwarka. So then he had to come back to this earth planet again. Specifically to Vrindavan. And he engaged in so many different types of services to Krishna and meditation on him, and then he got the chance to go to Goloka Vrindavan. So when he arrived in Goloka Vrindavan, at this time he had heard that Kamsa had just imprisoned Devaki and Vasudeva, and that Krishna had gone there, that actually they had just been imprisoned. The Pandavas were living on the outside, etc., etc. And that the evil Kamsa, etc., was engaged in his activities. So Krishna, he asked where Krishna is. So he's asking everyone where Krishna is, the darling of Jasoda. And he found out that Krishna was out herding the cows for the day. So he was busily waiting for Krishna to come back. Finally, the end of the day came, all the residents of Vrindavan, they all start to leave their houses, run out to the field, waiting for Krishna to come back. Herding the cows. Everyone was greatly ecstatic. They were so ecstatic that, you know, just like we've heard before, how the ladies, they put the top part of their dress on the bottom part and the bottom part on the top. And some of them decorated one eye, but only one eye, not both eyes. And they're all running out in great enthusiasm to see Krishna coming home. So he saw Krishna coming, playing on the flute in the distance. And then Krishna turned to Sridham and said, "Here is Gopakumara, the best of your family." So then Krishna ran towards Gopakumara and embraced him. And then Krishna was so ecstatic that he fell on the ground unconscious, and tears were flowing from his eyes, forming a little lake. So then all the residents of Vrindavan became very disturbed. They ran over and they said, "Who is this person? What has he done to our Krishna? Perhaps he's cast, perhaps he's an agent of Kamsa, and he's cast some evil spell over Krishna." So all of them became very disturbed, and Gop Kumara became bewildered. He didn't know what was going on. And so he's at Krishna's feet crying, you know, "Wake up, Gopal, wake up." And then Balaram came by and he looked at Krishna's condition. He couldn't figure out what was going on either. And he became bewildered too momentarily. But then he saw Gop Kumara and he realized what was going on. And so he took Gop Kumara and he put his hands around Gop Kumara's, around Krishna's head. And then he said, you know, "Pick up Krishna," and he was dusting the dust off Krishna, off his face. And then Krishna woke up and then he saw Gop Kumara and he kissed him. And then he realized what was going on. They woke up and all the residents were very happy to find Krishna awake again. And then Krishna and Gop Kumara walk back to his house. And then the pastimes go on in Goloka Vrindavan. There's a whole story about the Keshi demon there, who's there. But the Keshi demon there is a devotee. And there's a story about who else is there? Kaliya. Kaliya is also there in Goloka Vrindavan, but he's also a devotee. He takes the gopis and Krishna for rides on the Jamuna. So all these different stories are there, and then Krura appears, and all the, you know, he's going to take Krishna away. So that's the second part, and the first part is Narada Muni trying to find out who's the best devotee. But I don't think we have that much time to go over that. What's that? But I'll just briefly go over it. Narada Muni is trying to figure out who's the best devotee, so he goes to one. I think the first person he hears about is Prahlad Maharaj. Oh, Brahma. Oh, that's right. First he goes to the Kumaras. He hears that they're great devotees, and then they tell him that actually we're insignificant. Then he goes to Brahma, and then Brahma says, "You know, I'm not even a devotee. You're looking for the best devotee, because Narada Muni goes there and starts glorifying him. You're the creator of the universe. You're the source of all the living entities here. You're doing such a great service to Krishna." And Lord Brahma bows his head and gets real depressed. He said, "I'm not even a devotee." "What are you talking about?" He said, "As soon as Krishna came, practically the first thing I did is steal those cows and calves." He said, "Actually, I'm practically a demon." So he started to talk about all his faults. I think actually first he went to Indra. And then Indra said, "You know, I'm a rascal. You know, I try to kill all the residents of Vrindavan. You know, Krishna, fortunately he lifted the Govardhan Hill." He said, "If you actually want to find a real devotee, then go to Brahma." And Brahma said, "I'm actually a rascal. You know, I did so many mischievous things. And I'm not even a devotee. What are you glorifying me for? If you really want to find a devotee, then go and find Lord Shiva. Go glorify Lord Shiva." So then he went and saw Lord Shiva and started to glorify him. "You know, you're the greatest person. You're Mahadev. You're, you know, etc., etc." So then Lord Shiva said, he said, "I'm not even a devotee. What are you glorifying me for?" He said, "You know, I'm such a rascal that, you know, Krishna has a creation here to bring everyone back to Godhead, and I get angry and destroy the whole thing." So he said, "If you really want to find a devotee, then you should go and visit Prahlad Maharaj." So they went to Prahlad Maharaj, who's in he's not in Maharloka, he's in, what's that? Sutala. So he went to Sutala and he started to glorify Prahlad Maharaj, that the Lord has personally come. And even when Brahma and Shiva were offering prayers, only Vishnu accepted your prayers. And Prahlad Maharaj said, what are you talking about? He said, Vishnu came for a moment and then he disappeared. He was going to offer me all kinds of benedictions because, you know, I was born in a family of demons. He didn't even stay around for very long. He said, what kind of devotee am I? He said, if you really want to find a devotee, then go and find Hanuman. So then he went to where Hanuman is in Ayodhya, started to glorify Hanuman. You're the best of all the devotees, you know. You serve Lord Krishna and Lord Ramachandra. You took place in his pastimes. And Hanuman said, wait a second. He said, I'm not even a devotee. What are you talking about? He said, I'm just a monkey. He said, when Lord Ramachandra is here, when they fought against Ravana, I couldn't even win. I couldn't even hardly help him in the fight. He said they were exiled in the forest, so many different things. I could hardly help out at all. And then Lord Ramachandra got up and left me here all by myself. He said, what kind of devotee can I be? He said, if you really want to find a devotee, then you should go to, I think also in the meantime they went to Bali Maharaj. So then he went to Bali Maharaj, started to glorify him, how Vamana Dev is, etc. He said, actually I'm not a devotee either. What are you talking about? He said, Lord Vamana Dev, I gave him the whole universe, and he just pushed me down here to get rid of me. And he said, if you really want to find a devotee, then you should go to the Pandavas. So then we went to the Pandavas, Narada Muni, started glorifying, you're the greatest devotees, Krishna acted as your charioteer, as your messenger, etc. He said, wait a second, we're not even devotees. What are you talking about? He said that, here we are, we went through so many different problems. We were poisoned, we were put into a house of lack, And finally, after all this, Krishna just got up and left. He said, if you really want to find devotees, then go to find out the Yadavas and Dwarka. So then Narada Muni went there and started to glorify the Yadavas. They said, wait a second, we're not even devotees. What are you glorifying us for? So we hardly see Krishna. And they said, if you really want to find a devotee, then to see King Ugrasena. So then he went to Ugrasena and started to glorify him. You're the best of the devotee. Krishna offers you obeisances, etc. So he said, wait a second, I'm not even a devotee. What are you talking about? So Krishna just officially offers me all kinds of respect. But actually he hardly thinks about us. He's always thinking about the gopis in Vrindavan. He said, he hardly even pays attention to anyone here. He said, if you really want to find a devotee, then go to the gopis in Vrindavan. So then he went to Vrindavan and started to glorify the gopis. And they said, wait a second. We're not even devotees. We served Krishna faithfully. We brought him flowers. We did everything for him. We left our families and surrendered. And the rascal just got up and left us. He's not attached to us at all. What are you talking about? So in this way, Narada Muni went around trying to find out the greatest devotee. And then the next part is Gop Kumara going through the different layers of the universe to Vaikuntha and then to Goloka Vrindavan. So I'll stop there. It's an interesting book. One definitely learns about Vaishnava humility. All these great personalities are all just thinking out, we're the lowest. If you really want to find a real devotee, then go to this person, this devotee.
What's the relation of Veda Bhagavatamrita to Srimad Bhagavatam?
It's Sanatana Goswami's commentary on Srimad Bhagavatam.
It seems a little having a look at it, it's difficult to understand exactly how it's explaining Srimad Bhagavatam, but it seems to be.
Well, the Bhagavatam relates about the 12 Mahajans, Swayambhura, Narada, Shambhu, all these great Mahajans, and how they're on different levels of surrender and service to Krishna. So that's the first part of it. And then the second part of it, the 10th canto relates about the different relationships that Krishna has with his devotees. The different levels of consciousness. So both things are explained. Not only the different great personalities and how they serve Krishna, and how they serve the other devotees and glorify them, even up to the gopis, but also the different levels of consciousness that one goes through to come to Krishna consciousness. Yes.
Maharaj, there's a description of the different classes. Is it advisable to read these books?
Yeah, if you have a year or so, you read through. I mean, I don't... You find out... You may find out something new, but I really doubt it. Most of these things are not so important for us. You know, how to do things a little bit... Just like our main business is to be clean and to be truthful and to chant Hare Krishna and to think about Krishna. So these things may give us some technical way of doing it a little bit more sophisticatedly. But if you get involved in that and forget Krishna, then it's a waste of time. So I spent a week reading the Mahabharata. So it was an interesting book, you know, especially if you're in the mood of fighting. So it was quite an interesting book, especially most of it is about, you know, 10,000 huge elephants came and attacked Bhima. He picked up his club and smashed, you know, them on the heads and et cetera, et cetera. All the gory details, you know. So I was reading, it was interesting, then I decided maybe I'll read another. But then I took the Ganguly version. Ganguly version is like the full version. Instead of one book that big, it's four books, you know, it comes out to like that. So I decided to see what the Mahabharata was actually about. So I started to read the different pastimes in the Mahabharata. And it's like, so it's full of stories, one story after another. One person telling a story about another telling a story about another sage telling a story. But then I realized after reading the stories that actually the whole idea of the Mahabharata was to give some moral instructions. Instead of purports, they have stories. And about morality, about truthfulness, about proper behavior, about culture. It's like one story after another meant to teach people about how to become human beings and how to become cultured. But then in the summary study, there was nothing about, you know, this culture, hardly. You couldn't really understand. As a matter of fact, it kind of like eliminates all the important aspects of the Mahabharata. Although it makes interesting stories, but the actual essence of the Mahabharata, the reason for its being written, is just eliminated, practically speaking. And all you get is like the gory details of all the different warriors being killed on the battlefield, Kurukshetra, you know, a love story here and there, Bhima, you know, smashing a demon. But that's not why the Mahabharata is there. These things were just, you know, meant to attract people so they can learn some basic principles of human life. And culture and philosophy, etc. So similarly, if we read all these different vilasas and we forget the essence, then we're also just wasting our time. Someone may learn the Mahabharata, be able to tell many stories, maybe give an interesting classes, Mahabharata, but that's not what the Mahabharata is for. It's really just to teach principles. Ultimately, it's to teach philosophy and morality and etiquette and culture to people who are unfamiliar with it. Which, I couldn't say, I'm not, you know, I mean, we probably learn a lot by reading the Mahabharata, but it would take, you know, a long, long time. So in this age, it's recommended to chant Hare Krishna and read Srimad Bhagavatam, which is essentially the very essence of the purpose of the Mahabharata and other such literatures, and it has the purpose and the philosophy and everything else there. So the purpose that one achieves by reading the whole Mahabharata is better served by reading Srimad Bhagavatam. So it's the only better, although there's a Hari Bhakti Vilas, but there's nothing, you know, tells you Krishna is God and how to install the deities, but even the essential part about worshipping the deities is chanting the holy name in this age.
You spoke about the Mahalokam and Chandralokas. They were all meditating and practicing Svarna. So,
it's the recommended. I didn't say it was higher. it's the prescribed method for us. We're not capable of just sitting down and meditating on Krishna. So active kirtan is more applicable for us. No, there's nine processes. Shravanam, kirtanam is both part of it. Thank you very much. Granta Rashi Chaitanya Charitamrita Ki Jai Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai Gaur Premanande.